and welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Edmonds. Welcome, one and all, and thank you so much for joining us. And with me, as always, is my good friend and co-host. You are never going to believe it. It's Simon Brown. Hello, Simon.
Hello, and as ever, it is so good to be back. Yeah, it's been a bit of time. How are you doing?
It's good to have you back. Listen, I'm fantastic. I'm living the dream. Everything's all good. Yeah, we did have one episode planned, one episode booked, and we thought it was going to be really, really good. Unfortunately, one of the people we were going to be interviewing got cold feet, you know, which happens. That's okay. We might come back to it later. So for now, just to keep things going and to what I can only imagine will be to great disappointment of the people listening, we're going to do something that we haven't done, I think, in about 30 episodes. We've managed to avoid this. It's just going to be me and you talking today.
Yeah, my condolences to anyone listening. we haven't done this since episode one. So,
we haven't.
Yeah, and that was a classic, as we all know. but we have, will we interview and speak to the amazing people across the mini golf community? We have overlooked the fact occasionally we do actually still play the game, and occasionally we do okay at it. And it's quite funny when I speak to people, sometimes when they talk about the podcast, they actually ask why we don't speak about ourselves.
Sure. That you mentioned episode one there. I mean, just to fill the listeners in on some behind the scenes gossip, I suppose. When we listen to it back now, we think it's so bad because we really didn't know what we were doing. I literally just called up Simon one day and said, have you got some free time? And then started recording and just asking him questions. It's so bad when we listen to it back. Me and Simon have had real serious conversations about, do we just delete it and get it off our platform? Because when we look at the statistics, obviously so many people start listening at episode one. And it's such a bad introduction to what we do.
We've
considered deleting it, but I mean, we just kept it up in the end.
Yeah, when we've done things like approach sports psychologists and people and sort of try to engage them with what we do as mini golfers and say, this is actually a sport and this is a thing, and they jump on and listen to that. So with that in mind, we've decided to do it again.
Yeah, but we can't promise the quality is going to be any better. Not significantly better. But yeah, okay, so Simon, let's start with you. How have you been? How have the last few months been? Or maybe just talk about your season in general. How have you been playing? How have you been finding it? And then we'll come to your most recent event.
Yeah, well, towards the end of last season, I took a bit of time out, missed a couple of events, played some invitationals, and went to, it sounds awful, I know, I went to find myself as a mini golfer. I had lost myself. I was turning up to events and I was doing the same things and I was getting the same results, if that makes sense. And I wasn't getting what I wanted
sure.
out of it.
Sure.
I enjoyed my weekend away every month and I enjoyed battling for a top 10. It wasn't quite what I wanted. So I went away, focused and looked at different bits of my game and went into this season with a new mentality of actually wanting to kick on, which after 5 years of playing is definitely about time. It's not instant and it is mixed. I have off days, but I take it more seriously and I enjoy it in a way I didn't before. The season's been excellent. I mean, as ever, I feel like we pick homes in the BMJ and the British calendar, but as ever, they have put on a fantastic calendar of events. Mm-hmm. No matter what you would change, there's mini golf somewhere every month, full of amazing people. and it's a pleasure. There's a couple of changes to the calendar this year that I've enjoyed. I think coming into Hastings, I was starting to find some form then, and just missed the cut, which was painful, but you played. It was a tough field.
Mm.
Proper strong field this year. Everybody was playing well, and I think that's evident in all the competitions. And coming out of that, it's strange, missed the cut on a technicality and then just felt good. And I felt good at everything ever since. Yeah, so...
All right, so when normal people mention that they're going off to find themselves, usually that means going to Bali or Thailand, Bangkok, something like that. You said you wanted to find yourself as a mini golfer again. I imagine that involves something quite different. What was that process like?
That process was to step away from the top end of competitive mini golf and not put that pressure on myself. I happened to find a bit, there was a few months with a lot of invitationals, and I thought, enter those invitationals with the mindset of every invitational, I should be in the podium, like the top players would think.
Sure.
In top events. And sort of teach myself that mentality of you enter a tournament expecting to be at the top end of it, get that experience of being in the league group every other event, you know, sort of teach myself to battle for the top end of tournaments. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, if I can just do that and stop trying to putt better and start trying to process the game in my head in a different way. And I started to, I hate myself for this because I wish I'd done it sooner. I started to take advice and I started to listen to people.
Okay, what kind of advice were you taking? Who were you listening to?
It's a difficult thing to advise somebody to take advice, because I don't even want to say take advice, but listen to advice and see what bits land with you. Because different things land for different people and we all have different weaknesses. The thing for me that made the biggest difference by far was confidence on second putts and speed of second putts. I don't think I've came up short, but whether I made a putt or not, I don't think I've came up short on a single second putt all season. Every single thing hits the back of the cup.
That, to me, that is one of the most, that's when I'm most annoyed at myself in this whole game, is leaving the ball short, because it's never ever got a chance. So I'll always, if I get my ball 2 feet past the hole, 1 to 2 feet past the hole, I'm happy, you know, because I gave it a chance.
Yeah, I think it's just that commitment and that belief. And I think taking away the fear that if you miss a putt and it actually goes 5 foot past, that accept that you maybe made 5 other putts that could have come up short because you committed to everything. And just take that occasional drop or maybe that 4 once in a while. I think it's quite telling. I think I'll probably drop less shots this season in the home season than I used to in 2 events. So, yeah. What about you? What have you been focusing on?
Well, I was gonna ask about your most recent.
I'll jump into that one.
Yeah. So we've caught up now to your most recent event, the Welsh Crazy Golf Championship. Is this the second year this event has happened?
Yeah, this was one of the invitationals last year.
It was invitational last year. Got it. Okay.
Won by the super talented Richard Maud, who picked me on a first home playoff. So yeah, I came second in that to Maud last year, in windy conditions.
Right.
And much to my delight, it was added to the BMGA Tour this year. The Welsh Club using that as their option for an Open.
Yeah. Okay. And played at Prestatyn, is that right?
Yes, yeah, in North Wales. Everyone's got this perception that'd be close to me. It takes about 4 hours to get there. It's about as bad as going to Hastings for us in Wales, all the South Welsh mini golfers. But yeah, it is one of your classic Arnold Palmer seaside courses, and it's just a joy. To all of you, that
how is the course? What is the course itself like? Is it in good condition? Is it good to play?
Yeah, it's authentic, if that makes sense. You're playing a course that is a bit of mini golf history, and it feels unchanged. Many of the listeners here will have obviously played the similar Arnold Palmer course in Hastings. And as much as it is in 11 out of 10 condition when you play it, they do keep changing the course. And they do keep losing a little bit of the authentic feel every 12 months on it. You go back, you think, oh, that's a shame. Sure. They've changed to only 2. They've changed to only 11. And in Prestatyn, everything is to the manual as it was. And that makes you forgive the fact. I don't think the carpet's been changed in 14 years. But it plays well. And it plays like the mini golf that you went to play when you were a kid.
Yeah, okay. I know exactly what you mean. That does sound good. And what were conditions like for this tournament then? You said last year really windy when Richard Maud won. What was it like this year?
Absolutely perfect mini golf conditions.
Oh, nice.
And that's okay. Nice. You know when it's not windy.
Yeah.
You know when it's not hot, it's not cold. It's just in that sweet spot where you don't think about conditions, you only think about what you're doing with the putter.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and talk through, was it a three-round competition?
Yeah, it's exactly what you'd expect from a BMJ event.
Yeah,
three rounds. Nice sort of balanced field. I think we had maybe about 6 of the top 10 there. The concerning thing, though, was last year a 34 felt like a decent round because it was so windy, it was so bad. This year in practice, there must have been a half dozen people knocking in most of the practice rounds where 6 under or better. And it was that way you had, you know, decent but not top end players walking off with like late 20s rounds in practice. And everyone was starting to feel the pressure. And then going into the event, as always, those scores just vanished.
As they do. Sure.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Sure.
If somebody could figure out to do what we do in practice in a tournament, this is going to win everything.
Yeah.
If somebody can do that, how? I don't understand it.
Yeah, okay. So, first couple of rounds then, talk through how you were playing, how you were feeling, what your scores were like. First couple of rounds.
I think that's where I benefited from having a different mentality to how I play, because it wasn't exactly happening. And I knew it wasn't happening, but I've got to the point now, I know it's not me. I don't beat myself. I used to beat myself up something awful on the course. Right. I do a little bit still, but I do it in a motivational way. I can't often be found just walking away from home saying not good enough after I've got like a 2. But I just hung in there and I was looking about and nothing was happening. Because Ed Pope, he's been on fantastic form. And in practice, I played a couple of hours, I played with him. And he was knocking in 28s for fun. I think I made 8 aces in a round and I didn't make it to the 18th hole in match play against him. That's how good he was playing.
Wow. Okay.
Steps up to the first hole, hits a 4.
Right.
And it was that sort of day. And as flat as I felt, I looked about, no matter how good the players were, nothing was happening for anyone.
That's interesting. In perfect conditions, that is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it just didn't add up. So, even though nothing happened for me, going to the last round sitting in 4th.
Right, going into the last round in 4th. Can you remember how far behind the lead you were at that
point? Yes, yeah, 2 back. 2 back.
From Steve.
Not a bad spot.
That is spicy, isn't it?
I have to be honest, this sounds like absolute nonsense, but I do mean it. I think 4th is my favourite position to be in.
Okay.
Because
you're not in the final group, so you don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. You're not in that bubble.
Yeah.
You're not in that pressure. All you do is you putt last in your group and you win. If you win your 3-ball that you're in, that's all you've got to do. I quite like it. You stand back.
I've got a really quick side question for you. We're going to go on a tangent and then we're going to come straight back. Okay. Do you think, so you mentioned being in the second to last group in fourth place is quite nice. You're not in that bubble of the final group and they can't see what you're doing as well. Do you think in a perfect world, every group should have the ability to look up someone's scores easily on the course or see where they are on the leaderboard? So when the final group is on like hole 16, 17, 18, they know what they need to do in order to win? Or do you think it's better actually just the scores stay within the group? You don't know what's happening in the other groups. There's no whispers going around. No one's running up and down the course whispering. You play your round, you find out when you get into the cabin. What do you reckon's best?
I think it's nice to have the option.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, if you take Big Golf, for example, they've only got a look up and you've got a scoreboard.
The scoreboard's there, isn't it?
The scoreboard's 80 foot tall and, you know, there's no doubt in every other sport, in F1 and football and Big Golf, people are aware of what they play against.
Mm-hmm.
You don't tend to play blind.
Sure.
But in my case, I don't overly want to know. I used to be desperate to know. I used to, you know, almost chase about the course whispering to people between homes that I knew.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, what's so and so on? And
people do it. Yeah, people do it, yeah.
But then I figure out, you can't play someone else's score. You're playing the course, you're playing yourself. So interestingly, I think that segues nicely into the last round. We go out for the last round.
Yeah.
And I'm out with Richard Jones, who is the local player. And he's an excellent player on his day, and he's the local. Mm-hmm. I mean, in reality, he knows the course the best, and he could easily win it one year. And Andy Exum, who's absolute class.
Lovely, great.
And I was just thinking, just destroy this group and see what you get. Well, nothing happens again for any of us for the first half a round. It's really flat, maybe about one under. And at the same time, we're looking back at the group behind us, and they're as flat as us. And we get to the back nine. Okay. And I'm saying to Andy Exum, because he looks most likely, one of us needs to do something. Nobody is doing anything. If anybody does anything, no matter how small, we're going to win this event.
The game's theirs. Yeah, sure.
And there's no chance with so many top players here that no one's going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought, I'll do what I've always done. I'll force it. I'll make it happen.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, I'm going to finish 7th or 1st. I'll try my best.
Yeah. Why not? I love that. Why not? Yeah.
So I start to make some aces. I start to notice there's no other aces going in.
Yeah.
And I do not look at the scores. We had mobile scoring. So
yeah.
we could actually look at the scores. And as it gets maybe to the 16th, people start saying to me, do you want to know? And
yeah.
That's usually a good sign. Like, no, I don't want to know. I'm focused. So I ace 16.
Nice.
I get to 17. And I think it was Richard said, do you want to know? I'm like,
yeah.
No. I don't want to know. I want to ace this, and then I want to deal with 18th.
Yeah,
so I ace
yeah.
17.
Nice.
I done the math on it. I think there was an under 2% chance of acing those two back to back.
Wow!
So well, I was okay. Absolutely oblivious that acing those two had put me in a 2-shot lead over Seve. Seve had done what he always does, came through at the end somehow, and was up to joint lead as I was going into 16.
Okay.
I had no idea. He knew. So he did the opposite. He had been looking at the scores.
He likes looking at the scores. I know he does. Yeah.
And so he was acutely aware.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Stepped up to 18, hit the cup. It is the obstacle from the 18th and Hastings. Comes out, hits the cup, goes to the top corner, the worst spot you could ever be in.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm two up.
Sure. It's probably good at this point. Yeah.
Well, you would think.
Yeah.
So I done what I've done all season. Absolutely attacked the putt.
Okay.
Which is downhill. And missed it.
Right, yeah, and yeah.
Stuck myself a few foot away in the opposite corner.
Opposite corner, sure.
And it's not easy like Hastings, it's really not. And I still didn't know what the score was. So I just went down there and absolutely smashed it into the cup from there to win the event, oblivious that I had won the event. And then Sev came up, and if Sev had aced it, that would have stopped me winning. His comes out, hits the cup, jumps out, and that was it. it was one of those weird feelings because I felt like everyone knew apart from me.
So, sure.
Yeah, that oblivious little bubble. So in answer to your question, yeah, it should be available. I think it's good not to know.
Well, Simon, look, congratulations. You are officially the winner of a tour event.
Yeah, it takes a long time to get there. We've been lucky in the UK. We've had a couple of new winners this year. We've had a couple last year.
Yeah.
You know, we've welcomed Richard Maud, James Shaw, Martin Williams in Cornwall, and now me to that sort of winner circle. And I think that's good for the game. I think that's good for people coming through because I'm not an elite player. I'm not a top player. I think that gives hope to people that actually you can stick at it and you can get better and you can actually compete and you can win things.
Sure, sure.
That's kind of the point. You know, it's so easy to, especially when we do this podcast, it's so easy to talk about people like, you know, looking about the planet, just pick some names like Josh Mars, Rainey Statham,
yeah.
Michael Smith, and it's so easy to pick out top players and admire what they do. But there's an acceptance for me now that I'm not one of them, but that I can beat them on a good day.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm comfortable with that now. And that's nice because I don't chase doing what they do. I don't try to be them. It's quite nice. Yeah, so that was my day. I had a little win a couple of months ago. I won the Players' Championship, which is not quite a ranking event, but sort of a halfway. So I feel like I've had 1.5 tour wins this year. It feels good. Better days might never come. So I'll soak it up and wait for the next new winner. And one nice thing. I was getting a little bit, I don't want to say jealous.
Okay.
I don't want to say envious, but there is no other word. So I'm going to go with envy.
Yeah.
When people were getting the first tour win, I felt like, why isn't it me? It's quite nice now. I can go back to, there's so many people I'd love to see win an event.
Sure.
So I can just go back to enjoying that now. And, you know, hopefully I can be in the top group one day. And when it's not my day and I don't win, I can see someone else get one.
That'd be nice. Yeah. Okay. We started this conversation by saying you were on a quest to find yourself again in mini golf. You're on that journey. Now, having won this tournament, how do you feel? Are you motivated? Do you want to keep on pushing on and on? Has it sort of lit a fire that you didn't know you had? Or are you just sort of happy, steady? What's the feeling like now you had a little bit of time to reflect on it?
I'm going to sound massively ungrateful.
Go on.
I am underwhelmed.
That's okay. Yeah, that's honest.
It is everything I ever wanted.
Yeah.
And I immediately thought, so what's next? When's the next one?
Sure.
Yeah. It turns out that everything you ever wanted is just, it's the start of a new chapter, isn't it?
Mm.
You're somebody that can win an event. So in your head, that end goal isn't a destination. Oh God, it's so cringeworthy. It's just like something you've passed through. So it was a bit of an underwhelming when it sank in to think you haven't actually achieved anything. You just went to a new phase. Then now every single tournament I enter, I'll be disappointed if I'm not trying to win it.
Sure. Okay.
But I guess that's the point. So
you
want to be at that level. You want to have that expectation. You know, I've looked at people on podiums who look really disappointed to be second and third and thought, I wish I was second. I get it now. I don't think I'd want to be. So yeah, that's good. That's exciting. And yeah, next up is Taunton. A week from now. And that's something to look forward to. That's similar to this. We had an invitational last year. Similar level of field. Be a good standard, but maybe an achievable standard. So that's going to be a marker of my success. I'm not going to be able to go into that and expect to win it. But you'd want to compete at the top end. So I'll find out if I've got anywhere or not by how I do there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, okay.
Business as usual would be look for a solid top 10.
Okay.
And I'm not thinking like that now. It's got to be the podium.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. A couple of people have said 28.5 average might be the winning score. It's going to be a low winning score. I set myself 32 under for 4 rounds. So that's 28 average. And I'll see how close I get and where that gets me.
We shall see. Okay. I know exactly what you mean when you say it's underwhelming. I think it's generally why people now think this way of living your life to be goal orientated and to set yourself goals and just to work, you know, focus everything on achieving those goals is not the right way to live your life. Because exactly as you said, when you get your goal, it's like, oh, what now? What next? You know, I was completely motivated by making this goal and now I've done it. What do I do next? Instead, the kind of advice you're seeing more and more these days is just learn to enjoy the moment. Yeah, okay, you know, you can have things that motivate you, but take the enjoyment out of you improving your skills or putting work and effort in and more short-term immediate goals that you can see. Learn to enjoy that rather than setting yourself long-term goals, because like you found out when you did achieve it, it's like I don't know what to do next. Yeah,
you haven't completed anything. You just haven't. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just open up the next thing to do. So I've enjoyed it. And we're so lucky with the mini golf community, but people are just so nice and so kind. I've never had a nicer set of DMs from everyone. It's just single time I open my inbox or somebody saying something nice. And yeah, I felt the love. And yeah. That's mattered way more than the win.
Sure.
In a way. Has it? No, it hasn't. No, it has. it's been nice. It's been nice. Yeah. And yeah, we move, we go from here, and we've got a couple of tough ones to come that I will not do so well in, and I've got a couple that I've got a good chance in. So we'll see. But I'm soaking it up, enjoying it, glad to be here, and always lucky to play this game. I'm not the only one that's had a sort of decent result lately, though. I've been supremely focused on my game.
Yes.
You've developed a few interests that actually we haven't talked about in the podcast elsewhere in mini golf.
Yes.
So I don't think you've been as focused on your game.
No. But no, that's right.
You have found some form and you have played well at the OSEC Open.
OSEC Open. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I haven't been able to find the time to practice as much. It's a shame as well. I live so close to the Hornibyshek, of course, but it's just been finding the time to actually get there and practice. As you say, now I'm looking more into the organisation side of things. And, you know, I'm completely happy with that as well. Do you know, I'm making time investments now that will hopefully pay off later. So I'll have more time to enjoy the hobby, the fun, the practice side of adventure golf later, and while I just focus for now. So yeah, I haven't had too much time to practice. I've still been playing nearly all of the tour events this year. I've had a couple, maybe two or three, top 10 finishes so far. I had one really interesting thing happen at the Aga Abba, so that's adventure golf, Hornibyshek, at the marathon they play at the front course. I set my personal best record for that course, which was a 25. And for so long in that round, I had the possibility of making the record. I think I was on hole 16 and I could have achieved the record, which I think is 23. So that was really, really exciting, you know, in the middle of a long day to have that happen. To get a new personal best on that course. Really, really exciting. 25, obviously, a great score for that course. But other than that, I think my season last year up to this point was much, much better, much, much stronger, simply because of the time to practice and you know, invest into the sport.
Yeah, I get that. I think you can't be distracted in any way and expect to put in top performances. But you also, I guess, you're playing with sort of freedom. You've got less expectation on yourself.
Yes.
You know, even when you speak there, you've tempered it a little bit, the language you use around. You can tell that maybe you're not at your peak because you're looking elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think going into the OSEC Open, do you think that gave you a different mentality, more of a freedom to just go out and play your own game?
Yeah, well, it's sort of like when I'm playing adventure golf now, whether it's finding time to practice or be in a tournament, I really make sure to enjoy it. You know, I'm telling myself, right, this is the time that I have off. You know, turn the business mind off, turn everything like that off, get rid of all the distractions. This is now time for you to enjoy the thing that you love. So I don't have much free time now. So when I do get it and do get to practice or get to play the tournament, I'm really making sure to, you know, just enjoy it. Like you say, just be free, you know, be free, enjoy it, have a great time, talk to people. So, yeah, I suppose it is a little bit of a different mentality. You know, I've always enjoyed practicing and playing, but now I'm really, you know, I'm really making sure to stay in the moment and enjoy it, which I have exactly been doing.
Yeah, is there anybody you look to in the Czech game? Is there anyone you set yourself a sort of a barometer or a sort of yardstick, and you think that's the player that I compete with in my head?
Yeah, I suppose so. So at the end of last season, I did, like, the qualifications for the Czech national team to play in the Wagon, you earn tour points. So the Czech tour, they give out not really ranking points, because they're only valid for that 1 year and then they reset after a year. But for the 2022 tour, you earn ranking points based on your finishes that year. And I think I finished either 9th or 10th, which made me eligible for the Czech national team. And so, yeah, you do look at names around you and always keep an eye on them. One thing I'm really happy to support, my good friend Martin Setkoski, last year he finished just below me in those rankings. He qualified as well. But this year he has just shot up. He's found something in himself. And the other thing I should note as well, right? On the tour this year, the competition is crazy, because people are trying to qualify for the national team to compete in Brno, where the Wagon will be next year. So it's going to be, for the Czech players, Wagon is going to be a home tournament. So everyone wants to get into that national team. People are arriving at courses on Wednesday. You know, they're arriving one day earlier. You see them there on Wednesday to train and try and earn those tour points so they can qualify for the Wagon next year, which will be at Brno at home for them. And yeah, I've seen my good friend Martin. He's shot up through the rankings. He's put so much effort into it. So that's really, yeah, really good to see.
Yeah, I can imagine actually a home Wagon would have a fascinating effect on the local tour, wouldn't it?
Yeah. The competition is kicked up. This is the most competitive I've been. I've seen it since I moved to the Czech Republic, okay, 3-4 years ago now. So yeah, it's quite something. It's exciting. It really is quite something. It means there's that kind of, you know, undertone is maybe the wrong word, but every tournament now has that backdrop of drama, because it means so much to the players and they're attempting to qualify for the national team. And especially the Czech Masters, which will be coming up next weekend. And hopefully people are going to be able to watch the entirety of it from home. Fingers crossed. The Czech Masters and the Moravia Masters are worth double ranking points. So yeah, it's going to get pretty crazy next week in terms of the competition.
No, that's exciting though. Yes. I guess you get to watch it from a slightly detached, like a bystander. So you've almost got like a front row seat versus watching a nation battle out for these places. That must be fascinating.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is fascinating. yeah, it is fascinating. It's amazing to be able to have a front row seat and watch it, the highs and lows and the drama, and to see the emerging stars and emerging champions. Yeah, so many people this year, their game has shot up. You're seeing, yeah, people that just simply had a good form last year, now they have excellent form because they've been practicing and they want to make the national team.
Yeah, I can completely understand. I can only imagine if there was one in the UK, how much effort I would make and how much effort the home tour would make.
Yes, sure. Yeah.
But even without the backdrop of Wagham, I think watching players develop when it's not yourself teaches you so much. It shows you what's possible, but you take so much, I don't know, almost encouragement from people getting ahead of you, because you get stuck doing your little thing and then you watch them, then you think it is possible. Because the elite players don't, I've given up being taught by the elite players, because that's not me. I'm not an elite player. I'm not Michael Smith. You know, God help me for saying this. I'm not Mark Chapman, thankfully.
Yeah, sure.
As much as I love him.
Sure.
But yeah. I'm going to name check him. I'm going to put it out there. I'm going to be quite honest. James Shaw.
Yeah.
Who we've interviewed. He was, I'll be completely honest, he was somebody that 2 years ago, he's just a midfield nothingness of a nice guy at an event.
Sure.
Who honestly could be in a top 10. You thought, yeah, he could putt a bit. I never seen him kicking on.
Sure.
I never seen him as being as good as me. But that's the me that wasn't kicking on either. And then out of nowhere, he's just changed his mentality, changed his focus, went and done things his own way. I looked at him at events and I listened to a couple of comments he made about the way he was going to approach homes and things he was going to do.
Uh-huh.
They didn't really sit with me. And why they didn't really sit with me is because it was different. It wasn't what everyone else was saying. And he almost set himself up for it. He puzzled me a bit. And then he kicked on and he disappeared into the distance. And no one's particularly done that. You know, since you've started playing, people that have came to the tour in the UK haven't really destroyed it. It's still the same old, mostly. I mean, Seve's kicked on massively, obviously. Mm-hmm. Seve's winning loads, but he's been about for a long time.
Yeah.
And nobody's really came to the tour and done much. And I think seeing James just find a level, win a couple of events, and actually have that belief that he can compete. And it annoyed me. It annoyed me because I should have done that, and I didn't. And I love James to bits. He's a great guy. I was annoyed from just not a personal level. Just what was I doing? Not doing that. And yeah, and I think that's the best thing that could have happened. Somebody that I didn't notice was so far ahead in their mentality to what I was that I actually had to think, I've been left behind here. I better go and do something. So yeah, massive thank you to James for that. He doesn't even know that. But yeah.
But, yeah. The way I look at this, when I see players kick on and improve rapidly and find something in themselves that they didn't have before, I absolutely love it, because my whole thing is I want adventure golf to be more mainstream, not necessarily be mainstream, probably never have the same popularity as some other sports, but at least to have more sort of global recognition than it does at the moment. And if we get to that point, all I want is for the world to see really, really good athletes, people that are at the top of their game and are giving each other, one hell of a competition. It would be, in a way, it'd be really disappointed if we got this popularity, attracted a whole bunch of new players, and then actually discovered we're not really that good compared to the general population. Do you know what I mean? If we get that popularity, I want the people who are the top players now to still be able to compete in massive fields. So I love it when I see people improving in quality, because I think these could be our future stars. So I love to see it.
Yeah, I have asked myself that in the past. You know, I think we all want to see mini golf thrive, and I guess one day you get to a point where, unrealistic as it is, you'd like to see a sort of local club system where people have to qualify for the top events.
And, yeah, exactly.
Because that's the only way it could go if you had the numbers and the popularity. But I do ask myself, do I just get swallowed up?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah.
How many people actually, we always say this, how many people know about competitive mini golf and come and try it? Mm. And okay, 99% of what we see try it, we just gobble up and never see them again. But yeah, if it was out there, we might just be consigned to the local leagues. That's a strange thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it'd take people a long time to cut that gap, let's be honest. Look at every single time a big golfer turns up to mini golf. They don't get far, and they don't get far fast. And they could putt much better than I can. Much better than most of us can.
Sure, but if they put the practice in, you never know. But it would be interesting. Anyway, we've got 10 minutes left. I will talk about my most recent tournament, OSEC. I'll give you a quick bit of context, though, about OSEC and the tournament and the course. Okay. So I went there 2 years ago, was the first time that I went there. And I arrived on the Thursday. And on the Friday night, so word was getting around that on the Friday night, the owner of the course was going to hold like a little private party, like close the gates for the public. And so I went to it. It was fantastic. He closed the gates for the public. He got this projector out, projector screen out and a projector and showing films and music videos and that kind of thing. And a night was falling. Really, really nice night. Okay. He comes up to me and he's got this clear glass bottle. Glass bottle with no label on it, with clear liquid inside of it. All right, and I knew what this was. There's this very popular spirit here in the Czech Republic called slivovica, and it's very common thing to do. Is families have their own method of making it, and you can make it with like apricots, plums, that kind of thing, and you make this spirit, and the idea is, people will show up, come to your house, and you'll give them a little bit, and you might give them a bottle as a kind of present, that kind of thing. All right. So I'm at this party, and the owner pours me, he gets out his bottle of homemade slivovica, and he pours me a shot. Okay, I drink it. I think, oh, that's really nice of him. Drink the shot, say thank you very much. That was really nice. All right. And he keeps pouring them for me, like every 10 minutes he's coming to check, and after a while I'm not downing it, but I'm sipping it, but he's still keeping me topped up. And I'm thinking, God, what an amazing guy, what a really nice, generous guy this is, to keep me topped up with his homemade slivovica. Had a fantastic evening, music, dancing, drinking the slivovica. Fantastic. Okay. So I go to the course the next day, and I go to the cabin to have like a drink of Coke or something like that. And they hand me a receipt, like a folded up receipt. Okay. And I unfold it, and it's literally as long as my forearm. And on it is 12 of these shots of slivovica that I've got to pay for. So he charged me for them. He must have been filling up my drink, and then when I wasn't looking, marking down how many I was drinking, and he made me pay for them the next day. So that now, now what I do is I get to the course on Saturday. I don't go to the party anymore. I get to the course on Saturday. And what do I bring with me in my bag? Pre-made sandwiches. And I sit down and I wait until he's walking around like close to me, and then I get out my pre-made sandwiches and I munch them in his face, and he knows what he did. He knows what he did.
I thought you were going to say you offered him a sandwich. And
No. I eat them. I look at him dead in the eye and I eat my pre-made sandwiches. And it's like I'm saying, I'm not buying any of your food or any of your drinks anymore.
Nice. And you know you're a full mini golfer when you start taking a packed lunch. there's a certain generation that do that.
Yeah.
I think you can separate the people that have been on tour more or less than 5 years by do they take a packed lunch.
But the pre-made sandwiches, sure.
Yep.
So I get there on Saturday now. I skip the party. I have my little pre-made sandwiches. I don't give them any of my money anymore. So got there Saturday morning, just practicing. I had notes from the last couple of years. I also had to leave around 4:30 to do some other stuff. So it wasn't a full day's practice. All right. So I was doing practicing rounds. I was getting like +2, +2, +4, +1, that kind of thing. And I knew on that course, 36 is, you know, all right, good. You're probably, you know, you're not disappointed if you leave the course with 36. 33 is good. You know, anything lower than 33, really good. So, you know, my practice rounds, and you know, I was happy, I was enjoying my time practicing. I'm not going to compete. I'll be middle of the pack again. Absolutely fine. Okay. Day of the tournament comes. First round, I got a 39. Plus three, yeah, you know, fine. Okay. And I think the second round, I got a 36. Now, your new mentality of not looking at the scores, I've done that for a long time. I look at them after the competition, but I don't really care during the competition where I am. I don't tell anyone my score unless anyone asks me directly. And I don't ask people for their scores either. And I'm not looking on my phone. The only time I look is to find out the groups. Okay. So I see for the third and fourth round, these are 5-round tournaments, 4+1 final for the best 18 players. I see in the third and fourth round, I'm with Daniel Velcek and his last name, Mikhail Stuck. Okay. Two players in the same team as me, which is amazing. This is like hitting the lottery. I couldn't believe that those two players were going to be in the same team as me. Right? I thought I'd be well away from them. So we've got three players in the same team. It makes, for me at least, it makes a lot, you know, it makes a big difference. Everyone's helping each other. Everyone wants each other to do well. And for those two rounds, I just played the best that I've ever played. I've played the same quality with my other podium finishes. And what it is for me is just getting into such a mode of concentration. I'm not reacting when I get an ace. I'm not reacting when I get a bad bounce. Just completely like stoic, just concentrating on my shot for the whole two rounds. You know, it was a course with brick borders. So, you know, you could get a bad bounce. Maybe on an average round, you'd have two bad bounces throughout the round. Get a bad bounce and people would start wincing. You know, oh, unlucky. And I'll just put my hand up to shush them and go, it's no problem. Get up, get it in for a two. I was so incredibly focused for those two rounds. And that's when I play my best. If I start doing ace calls and things like that or getting frustrated, I'm probably enjoying it a bit too much. I'm probably a bit too much into it, but I was completely focused. And in those two rounds, I got a 31, which I think was the second best score of the day, and a 33, which again is a very good score. And then I think that actually put me going into the final round in the same position you were in the World's Crazy Golf Championships. I was fourth, so I was in the second to final group. And I was able to have a pretty solid final round. I think it was 35. And that was enough to jump me up into third place. So it's my fourth podium finish. I've had three third places now and one second place. Just a great experience. I couldn't believe I came third. You know, with everything I was talking about, I wasn't expecting a podium for a very, very long time. And it wasn't the practice, it wasn't knowing the course or anything like that. It was just the concentration that I managed to tap into for those two rounds. Obviously, greatly, greatly helped by playing with two teammates.
Yeah, it's always a joy to play with people that you play with quite often.
I think
I alluded earlier to it, if only we could take what we do in practice and do that in a tournament.
Yes.
I think giving yourself that little environment that you're used to from practice gives you that chance to, I don't know, you don't tense up the same. Yeah, it's a different feeling, isn't it? But yeah, you've done well. I mean, I've got to be honest, I messaged you when I seen you were on the podium, because he's done well there, because I've seen the good names. I've seen good names much lower down than you, and not knowing the tech game inside out, I thought, he's done well. So I popped you the message. Yeah. And I actually kind of missed that you hadn't quite added up. You've had a few podiums now. You have adapted well in Czech. Do you think there's a win coming? I mean, I know you're a bit distracted with the other side of mini golf at the moment, but can you see yourself winning something over there?
Going back to what I was talking earlier about long-term goals, the danger of having long-term goals, I am happy when I leave a tournament knowing that I've played well. That's where my real happiness comes from. So I was just buzzing when I got back from the tournament, because in rounds three and four, I was playing as good as I've ever played in my life. I mean, there's a few times I can recognize when I was playing that good and had that level of concentration. So I'm not thinking so much about the win in terms of it being a goal. Having said that, I'm not going to lie, obviously it would be nice. Obviously it would be great to win. I'm not saying that at all, that I wouldn't care about it. But yeah, my biggest happiness comes from when I can walk away knowing that I've played well. And yeah, you mentioned earlier that I was one of the people that kicked up in the UK tour in the time that I was there. I think that mostly comes from my mentality. It's the way that I've been able to compete well. And then the actual physical ability side of it is just something that I have to slowly improve over time. But yeah, I think that kick up came from my mentality and the way that I was able to stay calm and focused, and certainly this last podium came from that as well. And probably my other podiums, come to think of it. Will I ever win? It's funny with the podiums I have had, and with the second place, there's been different names ahead of me. So it always feels like some person has managed to get a lower score than me. With the possible exception of Mathieu Belcheck, who's just very, very consistent. I think he's been above me two or three times on the podium. But yeah, in my second place, it was Wojciech Mikrzowski, who was in first place in this tournament that's just gone. It's Jiří Bambas, one of the players who's greatly improved. He was in first place. So I don't know. And I think it'll probably just come down to the law of averages. If I keep playing and playing and playing, one day, you know, might get lucky and it might happen.
Yeah, and I think that's a nice thing. For those of us that are not the immediate elite, everybody can have their day, can't they?
Yeah.
You know, I've treated this like that was my day, and hopefully I'm at the start of knocking on a few doors occasionally, but if I'm not, I had my day. That was nice. When you came to the UK tour, I always say this, not many people since I have started playing have came and immediately looked like they had something.
People have developed
something. You know, there's some fantastic players have started playing since I played. James Shaw, Paul Tutt, you know, people that have actually went on to change and develop.
Yeah.
But you look good immediately.
Yes, and it wasn't the physicality. I can tell you that it wasn't really the physicality. It wasn't. It's not a sport that I'm used to. When I was younger, I played a little bit of racket sports, so I had some coordination there. But I think mainly it was my potential came from my mentality and my hardiness. That's a word, hardiness. Yeah.
And as much as I would agree with you, and that was my weakness.
Sure. So yeah, that's true.
It doesn't always look like it, but I kind of knew how to putt. And I kind of had a background in playing a little bit of golf, and I kind of understood it. But my weakness was the mentality. So
sure,
what I've addressed is probably what you had to begin with.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're one of three players for me in the UK that had something immediately. It was you,
yeah,
Richard Maud.
Yeah.
And Márton Gerda.
Okay. Interesting.
So, I mean, Hungarian, of course, but in the UK, 1 hour tour. Sure. And he picked up his second podium in Bristaten. And that's just a next winner waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when it will be. I don't know where it will be. But he's a genuine top talent. And it seems fairly effortless. He doesn't try as hard as most of us. He's quite special. A little name check for Márton, what a player he is.
Okay, well, let's wrap up by... I'll ask you this question. So your name is now crossed off a list of best players, you know, good players that had never won. People who should have won but haven't won yet. Your name is now being crossed off that list. Who do you think is next? Who will be next crossed off that list?
I'm going to go against saying, I just said Márton Gerda is definitely going to win something, but he doesn't play often enough. He doesn't practice often enough. So he's the most talented person in waiting to win.
Okay. But who will be next?
This is a bone call.
Gone.
There's going to be no new winner in at least a year and a half.
Okay.
It's going to be a long, long time.
That's a fair answer. I'd accept that.
And I'm going to say the next new winner, we haven't met them yet in the UK.
Ah, lovely.
I think that's possible. But there's a handful of people out there that definitely could in the day. Sid Cup this year for the Masters. We won't quite go into the course quality and how it might play. that's gonna be a wide open chance for people. Martin Greenhead has experience and on his day is a good putter. He's somebody that would like to go over the line one day.
Sure.
He's got a chance at the Masters this year. I think it's going to be a long time. A long, long time.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's a fair enough answer. I don't think that's a cop out, and we'll keep checking in on that, and we'll assess the validity of it.
And then I will check in with you then on who's going to be the next new winner on the Czech Tour.
I don't even know if I can answer. I'll just say myself. Why not? I can say myself. I'll say myself. I don't know the statistics as well to know who's won and who hasn't. So I will say myself.
It's a good way to end.
Yeah. All right. What should we call this episode? Drew and Simon.
For
an hour.
Let's be honest. This is the most self-indulgent thing we've done in a long time, isn't it?
It really is.
The self-indulgent episode.
It really is. No one's listening at this point.
I don't know. This episode should not be called this, but in my head, I've always sort of fantasized a little bit. I can't believe I'm admitting this. Yeah. That if mini golf became a big sport.
Yes. Go on.
And we were good.
Yeah.
And we were good and we were actually famous.
Yeah.
What would you call your autobiography?
Do you have an answer prepared?
Not for you.
Maybe like a putt above the rest or something like that.
I mean, I have one for me, definitely.
Par Andrew Edmonds par for the course or under par for the course. That's
lovely.
Yeah, what's your one?
Well, because much everyone's annoyance, anytime I do well, I point in the photos. I thought I would call my autobiography besides the point.
Oh, lovely. And obviously the front cover is a picture of you pointing.
Yeah, and it would be called Besides the Point because you'll learn more about me than just that.
Well, okay. Should we call the episode Besides the Point? And no one's got any idea what the episode is about. But I can't even imagine this happening. But for anyone that manages to listen to the end, they go, oh, that's why they've called the episode that.
There we go. Now that would be the little Easter egg for people that leave this on.
The little gift for the one person that pressed play and then forgot to turn it off.
Yeah, we'll never get another chance to use the title. Like okay. Yep. And with that, we're at the 19th hole. I thought I would steal something from Puttcast because they stole so much from us.
Right. Is that going to be the final chapter in your autobiography with that?
I love Puttcast. I actually really like their ending when they say, and with that, we're at the 19th hole. I think it's cheesy but smooth.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that said, it's goodbye from Simon.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you so much for listening and indulging us. Goodbye.
Oh.